to the May 25th session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development. We're in session. And I'm going to reverse our schedule here today and do the work session first because I have a feeling due to pending amendments that this may be a short work session, but we'll find out here in a minute. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 492A. Good morning. Come on up. Tell us what we may already have some advanced knowledge of.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brad Darcy. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Boxing and Wrestling Commission. And, Mr. Chairman, your suspicion is correct. One of the amendments that we were drafting for this session came back with a slight problem with it that's going to need to be corrected so that we can have this come out perfect. So I guess we'd ask that we postpone this meeting until the next possible time we can schedule it.
Mr. Darcy, we both respect and are grateful that you're trying to make a good bill even better. We'd be willing to do that. Any questions or comments? Yes, Representative Gerard.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually, I told Mr. Darcy, I wanted to clear up, I misspoke. I did not go to the Mayweather fight. I went to the Roy Jones Jr. fight, which was a much better fight.
So there you go.
I want to make sure everything's real accurate
for the record. Anyone else? Representative Dahlem?
And as long as we have this work session open, you've worked with the Eugene people and everything is good. It should be a very short hearing.
It should be. All right. Well, yes, Vice Chair Lim.
So we are going to have next Wednesday meeting. It's the final meeting?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And we will not be meeting, of course, on Monday. So.
Okay.
I'm coming.
I'm coming.
Are you?
Okay.
Well, you can enjoy the hearing room.
Okay.
So, with that, Mr. Darcy, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, you too. And I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 492. Okay, next up we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 725. And Ellen, could you please, I'm going to open the public hearing on that. Ellen, could you please tell us what that bill's about?
Yes, thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Senate Bill 725 establishes that discrimination against a person based on disability includes the failure to design and construct a multifamily dwelling as required by the Federal Fair Housing Act and the failure to renovate or modify a building as required by Oregon law designed to provide access to buildings for persons with disabilities. It establishes that a person may not discriminate against an individual or deny access to a multiple listing service or other real estate broker's organization based on the individual disability, prohibits a person from disclosing in the sale, lease, or rental of real property that an occupant or owner either has HIV or has died from AIDS. It establishes procedures for the Bureau of Labor and Industries and property discrimination actions. It permits actions in circuit courts for discrimination actions in purchase or renting real property. And the background here is that Senate Bill 725 is really an attempt to bring Oregon's housing discrimination laws in line with federal laws because this would permit Boley to contract with the with HUD to enforce at the state level all of the fair housing laws. And this is something that that Boley did in the past, and I think it's been maybe 15 years, something like that. And now they're attempting again to reform these statutes in order to bring them into what's known as substantial equivalence with the federal laws in order for the state to be able to enforce these anti-discrimination provisions. And there are -2 amendments that you all received sometime late yesterday afternoon, and I think these amendments were designed to address some of the concerns that HUD had to make sure that these statutes would bring Oregon into substantial equivalence. And it's my understanding that that HUD has reviewed those and feels that they do address HUD's concerns. The city of Portland had some concerns that one particular section needed a technical fix so that it made it clear that this only applies to multifamily dwellings. And then there was a section that allowed for the Department of Consumer and or DCB, whatever that is, that they were charged with funneling complaints up to BOLI, and that is not a function that they perform, and so they were amended out of the bill.
Thank you very much. Barry, you know that nice folder that you make up for me? I left that up in my office. Dog ate my homework. Do you have an extra?
It ain't true, Barry. That never happened.
Okay. I have. We'll share an amendment. Thank you. All right. With that, I'd like to please call up Peggy McGuire and tell us about this bill. Discrimination doesn't sound like a good thing. How are we going to fix that?
Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. I'm Peggy McGuire. I'm the Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We're a statewide nonprofit agency, and primarily what we do is education and outreach and assistance with enforcement opportunities. So we tell people about their rights and their responsibilities. We serve both landlords and real estate sales folks, as well as tenants. And then we also assist people who believe they may have been victims of discrimination in enforcing their rights. I've given you a couple of things. One is a copy of a summary of my remarks. And then the second piece, which for some of you is only one page back in front, are some examples of types of discrimination complaints that we receive from around the state. And what happens every year is we get about 4,000 calls from people who believe that something has transpired in their housing transaction that may not be right, may be potentially discriminatory. And our staff are able to help them sort that out, and that ends up with being about 400 complaints that actually are bona fide allegations of discrimination, that they meet all the requirements of a prima facie discrimination complaint that we can refer to an enforcement agency. We've been dealing with HUD because HUD is the agency that has the most complete discrimination standards and requirements. We would prefer to deal with BOLI. We have some complaints that have gone to HUD that have taken up to 8 years to investigate. If you are a victim of discrimination and you have to wait 8 years for your rights to be championed and for to receive a redress of your rights and potentially receive any damages that you may have incurred, you could be homeless and long gone. And part of the problem that we have in enforcing these discrimination complaints is that people don't have a safety network in most cases. If you're a person who's low income, you experience housing discrimination, you file your complaint with HUD, and it takes years and years to investigate, you don't have time to stay in one location. You're scrambling to find housing, and in most cases, people end up homeless. They end up moving in with family members. They move to other states to move in with family members, and then people's rights go unaddressed. We're concerned about that. We'd like to see BOLI have the ability to do the enforcement, and we hope that you will support Senate Bill 725, because we really do want to have local enforcement. It also streamlines the process for landlords. When a landlord currently, if they receive a fair housing discrimination complaint against them, an individual could file with HUD. In some situations, they could file with BOLI, and it's very confusing to landlords. They're fighting two discrimination complaints at once. This would allow everything to come under BOLI's network. So I'm happy to answer questions if you have any. Or
all right. Thank you very much. Representative Gerard?
I'm looking for the definition of familial status.
It's the presence of children under 18 in your household. And that can happen because you had children, because you adopted children, because you have foster children, because you're getting remarried and children are joining your household.
Is that defined in the bill? I'm missing it.
I don't know if it's defined in the bill. It's in the federal fair housing laws.
Okay. And the second thing, because I was also on page 10, the fines, they seem pretty hefty, but I mean, I obviously we don't want discrimination, and I was just going to, you know, it's $50,000, $100,000. I can understand the subsequent violation, the first violation, I'm a little bit hesitant to go that amount. Is there a reason that you went so high, or?
Well, those are the federal standards.
They
and
are?
This bill is bringing Oregon Lion to substantial equivalency with the federal standards. And just to clarify on what happens with the penalties and fines, the jurisdiction that's adjudicating the complaint has the discretion as to whether fines need to be assessed. It's pretty unusual to have penalties or fines assessed in a fair housing case. Typically, those happen only in really the most egregious cases.
Okay. Good answer.
Yes, Representative Baum.
I have two questions. One, as I look at the map here, we're one of the last ones to come in line with this. Why haven't, what has been keeping us from coming in line before? Why the holdup?
Well, probably the folks at Boley could give you more of the history on that. I've only been in Oregon for 7 years, but it's my understanding, because I was shocked when I moved here from Washington that was the case. And what I've been told is that the previous commissioner didn't necessarily have the interest in pursuing that. In 1988, the laws changed, the federal laws changed, and familial status and disability were added to the protected classes. Just a piece for your information, 75% of the housing in the nation at that time didn't accept children in the household. So in 1988, Congress felt something had to be done to create housing for families with children. And at that time, our laws didn't change to maintain substantial equivalency here in Oregon. And so until Commissioner Gardner was appointed, there wasn't really the desire to continue on with that relationship with HUD.
And then it would seem to me that the realtors, and I might be asking, I should probably ask Dan, but it would seem to me that the realtors, by your previous testimony, would want this consolidated of effort. Will the realtors come in here and say that? Do they support this bill, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahlem, first of all, for the record, my name is Dan Gardner, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Actually, the realtors have no objection to the bill. They've been completely neutral on the bill as long as their stance has been with me, as long as all this does is gets us substantially equivalent to federal law, which they already have to deal with, they have no problem with it. And we have been trying to pass this bill for 3 sessions now. It's actually in 2003 it passed the House, or passed the Senate in a House bill, was not concurred on in the House and never called the conference committee. Last session it passed out of the Senate 24-4 and never got a hearing in the House, and this time around it's passed the Senate again 24-4. All this, if I could just add a few things, Mr. Chair, this bill really does a couple of things. All it does is gets us substantially equivalent to current federal law, period. It doesn't add one other thing that isn't current federal law. Currently, investigations on housing are being done by the Housing and Urban Development out of Seattle, Washington. So Oregon cases are being investigated in Seattle, Washington. What this does is allows us, once our laws are equivalent, to enter into a contract that we have had before with HUD and bring those investigations back home to Oregon, bring federal tax dollars back home to Oregon, and allows us to have that type of an investigation status. There is absolutely no known opposition to the bill. We worked out amendments with the City of Portland, with the Department of Business and Consumer Affairs, our services, Building Codes Division, DCBS, BCD. You're welcome. with the realtors, with everyone involved in the bill. As I say, there is absolutely no known opposition to the bill, and this just allows the potential for that contract and for bringing those investigations back to happen.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. In other state cases, if there is any housing discrimination, which agencies investigate? Do they have a same like a Boley, our state, or they do the HUD or DCBS? Which agencies do they go to investigate?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, in most cases we send people on to HUD because their laws are much stronger than ours on state statutes. So in that case, most cases go to HUD. Matter of fact, if the particular complainant hires an attorney, any attorney in the state of Oregon will recommend they go to HUD because our laws are not substantially equivalent.
Okay. How about the other states?
Go ahead.
Chair Witt and Representative Lim, I'd like to say that in what I'm familiar with is Washington State, and there are a number of different, they call them FAP agencies. The contract is called Fair Housing Assistance Program, so the acronym is FAP, and there are a number of FAP agencies in Washington. And whatever area you live in, if there's a FAP agency, that agency has jurisdiction, and that's where you go. That's the only entity that engages in the investigation. And if you contact HUD, if you're an individual who feels you've been discriminated against, you contact HUD, HUD takes the information, and then they send it back to your local area to that contract agency, and they do the investigation. And if I could also add, one of the problems that we find frequently, we'll have someone contact us and say, this is what happened. I went there. We have a case in Gresham that I gave as one of the examples where there was an owner-manager who, when she met the client, discovered that the client was Latina and said, oh, no, this isn't going to work for me. I only want white people. And she went back out and she signed, she wrote on her sign in her yard, whites only. And in a situation like that, that is so egregious, you would think that we could get a temporary restraining order to prevent her from renting that unit until we can help her understand that she can't discriminate in that way. But it's almost impossible. In the 15 years that I've been in the civil rights field, I've never seen a temporary restraining order come out of HUD or Department of Justice, even in a situation as egregious as that. And the local FAP agencies routinely are able to provide a temporary injunction to prevent that landlord to keep discriminating until somebody can talk to them and explain that they can't continue to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, if I could, you know, what would happen in Oregon, and I have already met with the Deputy Director of Housing and Urban Development when she was in town about a month or so ago. They're very interested in entering into contracts with us. They'd rather contract with the states to do the work than, you know, hire their own folks to do it themselves. What would happen, basically, is whenever they got a complaint, we would absolutely be the agency of origin. It would only be one place. You know, you could file it either with them or with us, but we would do the investigation. What it would do is finally consolidate where now you actually could file with both.
Okay. One follow-up, please. When someone complains, do you have any way to educate them, the landlord, or that some mediation? Sometimes people act without knowing the law or some biased opinion. And instead of we are going to take, you know, to the court or we'll fine you, whatever, do we have a mechanism? Make sure they understand that they make sure they got the information, and instead of penalizing them, give them a chance to correct that.
I think we both can add some information to that. For one, I'd mention our technical assistance unit for employers. The first thing, once we entered into a contract with them, we currently don't do a whole lot of technical assistance in this area because we don't enforce on it. So one of the things I would do is use the technical assistance unit, our own website, and put on seminars and work with landlords to add information and first to educate. And I can see my director of Civil Rights Division wants to add something to that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Representative Lim. For the record, my name is Amy Clare. I'm the administrator of the Civil Rights Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And were we to get substantial equivalency, my division would be the one that would do this these types of investigations. We actually have approximately half of our investigators, so it's about 7 or 8 of them now have been, they're certified mediators, as am I, and that is definitely, even in the current cases that we do around employment, settlement, mediation is always an option that we put out there because we agree it's in the best interest of both parties to try to get the matter settled as soon as possible.
So I guess what I would say, Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, first it's education, then it's mediation.
I do appreciate that. And one concern can I express?
Please.
In this session, I'm beginning to see that the Department of the Bureau is getting expanding more and more and more authority, which is good, sometimes bad. and this is one of the also giving more power to the bully to get the job done. And I'm somewhat concerned continually expanding bully, and I don't know whether you have enough manpower, lady power, to get the job done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, actually, this bill just gets us substantially equivalent. Should we enter into a contract with Housing and Urban Development to do this, they would be providing payment to us, and we would have to go to the emergency board in order to get position authority to actually do the work. This is just the first step in several steps to get us there. And it's not a matter of expanding any authority. We have the authority now. It's just our laws aren't substantially equivalent, so we don't actually do the work. We send it on to the feds, and they do it in Seattle. This just brings it back to Oregon.
Okay, thank you.
And I just like to say that or ask rather, Amy, if you would, excuse me, Director Clare, we used to be co-workers, so in any event, I was just wondering whether you would like to comment at all on staffing, level of staffing, what you have available in the caseload that you have.
Mr. Chair, Amy Clare again. We have we have a lot fewer staff than people may realize. In the Civil Rights Division for the entire state, we have 30 employees, and 15 of whom are investigators. Caseloads right now, and these are mainly, we only receive around 5 to 10 housing complaints a year, but the employment complaints, the caseloads run as high. We have one investigator with 85 cases in the caseload, and their file's like this big. And then another, it varies from about 30 cases that are real low, to up to 80, 82, 83. And the quantity of calls we get a year, intake calls, like you were saying, these 4,000, we get 27,000 to 30,000 calls a year fielded by 3 intake officers to find out if this is something that we have jurisdiction over or we refer them out. That translates in when they really have something that we can deal with and they want to pursue a claim with us, about we get 2,500 complaints a year, divided among those 15 investigators.
I think it's fair to say that your staff is exceedingly busy.
Very.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you. Welcome to our committee. I thought I saw someone down on this end. No?
That was maybe my question was answered.
Okay. Anyone else? I'm not seeing anyone. Thank you all very, very much. Certainly appreciate your testimony. Please. Welcome.
Thank you. Representative, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just for the record, my name is John Christensen, and I serve as staff for Senator Margaret Carter. Senator Carter is the chief sponsor of this legislation, and she's actually meeting with the co-chairs right now, moving into full Ways and Means, otherwise she would be here. I'm simply here to thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you very much. Mr. Christensen, are you aware, would the senator like to testify on this? We could take a couple minutes recess if that would accommodate her.
Representative, that's really kind. I have to find out where the senator is.
Okay. All right.
She started about 6, maybe 5:30 this morning, and worked late last night.
Is that something you would like to do?
It's fine the way it is, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Certainly appreciate your comments as well. Anything else? Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify on Senate Bill 725? Once, twice, going. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on that bill. Committee members, is there a willingness to move this bill?
I have two questions I'd like to get. I want to move this bill, but I want to get two questions answered. And then I'd make the motion.
Well, before we do, I'm kind of in the middle of no public hearing and no work session, so.
My questions are going to take outside sources.
Okay.
And I just have a couple of questions. I want to move this bill, but what's troubling me, I want to know why there's 10 states that haven't done this. That's a fifth of them. And why we've been 3 sessions not doing it. Other than that, I can't make any.
I know the answer to the second question.
Sure.
You don't really want to know. You don't really want me to put that on the record.
Perhaps we could have a little hiatus.
All right. Would you like a little recess? You're okay.
Well, I'm either so naive or something is right in my face and I can't see it.
Representative Dolan, while we're figuring out what we're going to do, maybe you want to step outside for a minute. Yes, I'm going to recess us momentarily.
Are we off?
We are off. And I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 725. Committee members, we had been presented with -2 amendments on this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the adoption of the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 725.
Vice Chair Riley moves the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 725. Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chair?
Vice Chair Lim.
What's the difference of -2 with the original bill?
Yes.
Did we discuss that last this Monday or Wednesday?
No, we
didn't. Okay.
We did not. Well, if you'd like to come forward.
Let me get you off the hot seat. Two essentially includes some last
minute. Mr. Christensen, if
I'm
you
sorry.
Would please
I apologize.
Identify yourself for the record.
Sir, I apologize.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is John Christensen, and I'm a staff person in the office of State Senator Margaret Carter.
Thank you.
And Senate Bill 725 originated from our office. We've worked with virtually all the amendments that have come in. Senator Carter has requested all those amendments. Two combines some minor amendments that came in from, I believe it's the Employment Department and also the City of Portland. They were minor technicalities. I think one was the deletion of Section 12. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the other one was just a little bit of wording change for the City of Portland. That's all it is.
What was that one?
A little bit of wording, a deletion from the City of Portland.
Okay. What's the deletion?
Do you have a number?
Commissioner Gardner, could you
come on.
Assist us?
Thanks.
Basically, with the City of Portland, they wanted to make sure that we were only doing this with multifamily units. With Department of Business and Consumer Services Building Codes Division, it had to do with building code enforcement. And we had actually some language in there working with them to do that particular portion. But actually what we've done is worked out with HUD where in an initial contract, we wouldn't necessarily have to do that particular portion until we had investigators that were actually trained in the area of building codes to be able to make sure that that particular section of HUD administration under Housing and Urban Development would have the people trained in order to do that kind of work.
And for the record, that last testimony was from Labor Commissioner Dan Gardner.
And there are two other little issues. They were just corrections that Housing and Urban Development wanted to make sure. They had a couple little areas. They didn't think we had quite the right language to get substantially equivalent, so we changed those to get them just exactly substantially equivalent with the federal standards.
One more question.
Please.
As I read the original bill, section 1 and page 2, subsection 10, in the sale, lease, or rental of real property, a person may not disclose to any person that an occupant or the owner of a real property has or died from human
HIV, yeah.
Yes, HIV, a virus, or acquired immune deficiency syndrome. In this dash two amendment included in it, or is this just an addition to it?
That was just to correct that. That is in federal law. That is current federal law, and it just gets our law a substantially equivalent or as close to exactly the same as we humanly possibly can with the federal law.
Okay, so this is the federal law.
It's federal law.
Okay. Just a follow-up question then.
Sure.
I don't have any contention the federal law about that. That this disease could be transmitted to someone else without having the knowledge moving into that house. And this is a health issue. How do we handle that issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, that's an issue as far as the health issue that's up to the health department, both federal and state, and I'm not well versed in what those health departments do on this particular issue.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, my concern, maybe that has nothing to do with the Dash 2 Amendment, but the bill as it is, this is transmitted by the human blood was sprinkled someplace else, and they might not know it when they move in, and the children could be touched or anyone, if they could get this disease. So I'm concerned of this matter.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lim, Peggy McGuire, Fair Housing Council of Oregon. This is a question that we routinely get from landlords when we do training. We do about 1,000 training sessions for housing providers every year around the state. And my understanding from the training that I've received from the health department is that you can't get HIV or AIDS from simply having contact with anything in the housing that someone may have touched. You actually have to have person-to-person, very intimate contact with someone. So that's the reason why this isn't something that needs to be disclosed, because if someone moves out of an apartment and the landlord goes in to clean the apartment, they can't get HIV or AIDS from touching something that the person with AIDS has already had contact with, no matter what's happened in the apartment, even if the person's died in the apartment. So what happens, because the Fair Housing Law protects people with disabilities, people with AIDS and HIV are considered a person with a disability, and you're disclosing the details of their disability, which violates federal fair housing laws.
Yes, Mr. Chair, follow-up question. There should be no discrimination to anyone, anybody, whatever reason it might be, even including HIV.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt about it. But at the same time, when the person's blood somehow is on the floor, and then maybe dog licked it, and then the children might, dog might lick to the children or somehow contact, and it could get it. And I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about it. I want to make sure that the public safety is an important issue. I just want to address the concern of that.
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, Peggy McGuire, if I could just expand on that. Again, my training from the Health Department indicates that the virus is not able to live beyond a few seconds in the air, if even that. So, again, we're talking about people who are transferring housing or a maintenance person who may be going in to do some repairs, and it's unheard of. I've not ever heard of a case in all the 15 years that I've been doing this that somebody acquired AIDS or HIV from having that level of contact with the housing.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question.
Please.
In this dash two amendment, could you give me the definition what it means, familial status?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, again, Peggy McGuire speaking. The definition of familial status is the presence or the anticipated presence of anyone under the age of 18 coming into the household. So that can happen because someone's pregnant, they're going to have a baby, they're adopting children and the children are coming to the household. Perhaps someone's getting foster children or they're getting married and the new spouse is bringing children into the household. Any way that you have children come into the household. And just for clarification, there are senior exemptions to the Fair Housing Law that are specifically spelled out under the Housing for Older Persons Act that allows for senior housing to be exempted from allowing children into that housing.
Okay,
and Chair Whip, Representative Lim, if I give you a real-life example of familial status, we had one recently I had to deal with in the area of employment, not in housing. But we had a situation where a young man, he was married to the child's mother. They were in the process of adopting the child. The child had a very, very serious illness and was quite literally dying. The hospital called and said they had only a few more hours, and he wanted to leave his place of employment as a men's clothing salesman. And the employer told him, well, you can go, but you may not have a job when you're back. And I got to tell you, he called our office because it, and we called the human resources director of that company and suggested if they, you know, perhaps didn't want to lose a couple $100,000 lawsuit, they might reconsider that position. Because under familial status, that young man had been raising that child for over 2 years, attempting to adopt that child, and he was in every way, shape, and form acting as that child's father.
Okay, just one more.
Certainly, you're fine, Mr. Chair.
In this dash two amendment or in the bill, I couldn't find any section or any language that covers the group of people of gay or lesbians. Is this adequately covered in here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I believe that would be because of the addition of Senate Bill 2, that would add to this bill. I don't know if that requires conflict amendments or not. Because Legislative Council has not presented them today to this committee, I assume it's covered in another fashion, so they're not necessary.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, I could also address that. Sexual orientation and gender identity are not protected classes under federal law. At the point in time that Governor Kulongoski signs the bill adopting sexual orientation as a protected class in the state of Oregon, we'll simply have a more we'll have an additional protected class, and that's a relatively common thing. Many states have additional protected classes above and beyond the federal classes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Additional questions? I'm not seeing any.
Thank you all very, very much. And Peggy, I wanted to welcome you to our committee, too. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so we have a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any objection to the adoption of that motion? I'm not seeing any. The Dash 2 amendments stand adopted. Vice Chair Riley?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 725 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Riley moves Senate Bill 725 as amended to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
This is a good deal, and it's way too late. We're acting on this one, so I give my full support of this bill.
Vice Chair Lim, thank you very, very much for your support. And I'm sure that the folks in the audience are very appreciative of that as well, as is the rest of the state. Further discussion? I'm not seeing any on the question. Barry, please call the roll.
Representative Barner?
Aye.
Representative Dell?
Aye.
Representative Drott?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lim?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Wood?
Aye. Senate Bill 725, as amended, having received the necessary vote, is passed to the House floor. Committee members, what's your feelings about the consent agenda for this? I think this is appropriate.
Sure.
Any objection? Okay. With that, consent agenda, and I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 725. Further business to come before our committee this morning? I'm not seeing any. Ellen, would you please give us a summary of what we're going to be doing on Wednesday, which is the last day of this committee?
That's correct. Thank you, Chair Witt and members of the committee. On Wednesday, May 30th at 8 a.m. in Hearing Room C, you'll be having your last committee meeting, at which time you'll be having a work session on Senate Bill 665A, which expands the development allowed in conjunction with Speedway Destination Site in Morrow County. And you will have carried over from today's agenda a work session on Senate Bill 492A. And that will probably be it.
Okay. Great. With that, seeing no other business, our committee stands adjourned, and I hope everyone has a very nice weekend.
So we do.